This is the first of the two finale episodes for Season 1. Part 14A being this one, and Part 14B being the true final episode of the season. So without further ado, Chapter 1, Part 14A. Aetherun Dark Saga is a dark fantasy audio drama. It contains themes of violence and is intended for a mature audience. Listener discretion is advised. With his blackened fingertip, still coated, he traced the final edge of the circle. The start and end meeting, converging in a symbol of eternity. Within the circle, glyphs and sigils from an ancient time written in the most potent of all reagents, blood, spelled out their dark purpose. His bare chest was spattered with arterial spray, as well as a pair of bloody handprints, the last remains of a desperate act from one of his fallen victims. He felt no pity for them as they died. None but the last had known death was coming for them, drugged by the Veridan root and kept in the deep slumber it provided as he sliced open their throats. All life was sacred to him, and all life had power, and he needed that power now as he performed this ritual. He had of course betrayed them, yet the feeling of guilt, the feeling of shame had not followed his actions, and nor would it have stayed his hand, even if it had. This was his vengeance. This was his retribution, and this was how he would punish those who had wronged him and his family all those years before. In the days of his youth, plague had ravaged the lands of Arn. His town, like countless others, had been put to the torch, and whilst the bodies continued to pile, the creeping chill, as it was called, took life after life in its ceaseless spreading. The disease did not discriminate. Poor or rich, knight or swaddling babe, all suffered the same fate. Limbs blackened from necrosis as the sickness spread from toes and fingers, head to heart. Door after door, gate after gate, all barred entry to his family. Salvation denied by heartless guards or so-called holy men who feared the plague more than they had faith in their so-called gods. He watched as his father pleaded with guards, pleaded with strangers, begged for help, yet none came. They travelled further north, with hopes that within the walls of the great city of Kalendor they might find salvation. Surely here in the home of the protectorate god, the city of the king, they would find the hope they needed. Yet spear points greeted them at the gates. He remembered the fear in the guard's eyes, the look of disgust as they pushed away his mother with the butt of their weapons. And in less than 3 days, his mother lay upon the ground, her skin as black as pitch, her flesh mortified. He held his sister's hand as his father wept, stroking their mother's face with his own fingertips the colour of soot.
No. 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 No.
Weeks had passed, and he was now alone, lost in the wilds of northern Arteria, the last of a family who had yet to fall to the plague. But he was starving, weak and thirsty, a wayward body slowly succumbing to the creeping chill. He remembered that strange, cold sensation in his palms, the way it felt like painful pins and needles in his fingertips, how alone he seemed, how furious he was with the world, and how soothing the warm hand that now lay upon his shoulders felt as he wept. She had found him, adrift amongst the grove. She, a druid, a witch, a crone. She had found him, and she had taken him back with her. And with her skills and herbs, she alone had saved him from almost certain death. The children of Armunve, the last of the Aerodan and the grey druids of the woodland. Their leader had found him, the one they called Mother, the one he called Morgran. It was she who raised him, and from then on, taught him the secrets of the forest, the path of balance in all things. Armunve, keeper of the scales, was her god, and she assured him it would soon be his. And for a time, it was. Eagerly had he learned to wield the fire of shade and sun, the brightest of flares and the blackest of flames, the ways of truth and the path of lies, the lessons that acts of pure goodness or deeds of malice tip the scales too far and must be balanced. As the days became months, and the months rolled into years, he had grown to become his teacher's equal. None amongst the grove could present a challenge to him, and in their foolish, misguided faith in Morgran, they had been blinded to his true nature. Where the mother sought balance, he dreamed of revenge, the need to bring sorrow into the hearts of those who denied sanctuary to him and his family. And now, a decade passed, years of seething hatred kept under the surface. The bile within him had finally boiled over. He was intent in smashing the scales entirely in favour of the darkness. In his dreams, he had been spoken to, a voice he did not recognize, a terrifying call from something beyond. Yet as scared as he was, something in that voice felt familiar to him.
The scriptures, they keep it hidden from you. They fear what you might learn from it.
And what would I learn from it?
Your heart's desire. Revenge.
I would have my revenge, regardless of some parchment.
This will make it easier for you. I wish only for you to have the retribution you seek.
He had followed its instructions. Whoever this speaker was, it had told him just how to secure the scroll and how he could use it to garner power for himself. His turn had come to help with making the food for the grove. Having chosen this time to act, he spiked the broth with the Veridan root. All would sleep while he preyed upon his unknowing victims. The 8 he chose were the youngest, with the exception of Morgran. Though she had remained young, youthful in body if not age, she had been granted a gift which served to maintain her youth. A gift which he intended for himself. Immortality from Armunve. And if he could not take it from her, then performing the ritual would demand it from the god. And now, his preparation complete, he began the ritual. Yet he had not foreseen his weakness. As much as his need for revenge, he could not bring himself to kill Morgran. So instead, he bound her and cast her to the side, leaving the druid to watch as he dragged another in her place.
Armunve, hear my call. Order must you return. Balance must be restored to the scales. For the lives I have taken, grant their life unto me.
The candles which he had placed in position abruptly guttered out, and then relit themselves again. Only now they were brighter and burning high, the wax melting away as if thrown into a blaze. The pooled blood at his feet began to converge, draining what little remnants remained inside of the slaughtered druids, leaving pale, withered husks broken within the circle. As it gathered, it slowly rose, forming a pair of legs, then a torso, and on until, finally, a human form stood before him. The sanguine fluid rushing about its shape like a wild river. Features began to appear, as the skull of some alien-like creature emerged from the pool that was its head, tilting its hideous face in a measuring look, before it jammed one of its long arms into his mouth, the rest of its body following behind. His very being shook. The sacrificial blade fell from his hands and hit the floor, but was lost in the sound of a gurgling moan he made as the entity of blood forced itself within. Suddenly, a sharp blast of pain made his eyes pop wide as he found himself upon the floor. Less than half the being of blood had returned to what it had once been and now soaked him and the ground around him. It was Morgran. Her hands engulfed in bright flame and she had sent it forth, striking him low and ending the ritual. He stared at her, his mouth coated as if painted red, his skin slowly changing to the same pale shade of those of the corpses around him. Then, the others were upon him, emerging from the trees with rope and confused faces.
Hurry, protect Morgran.
While he is still weak, bind him!
This is demonic.
They subdued him at Morgran's command and bound his hands and feet, gagging him before dragging him away. All the while, his body began to change. His fingernails became talon-like. His hair fell away in its entirety. His chest heaved and reformed. Six small horns burst from the back of his head, growing at a slow but steady pace. He did not feel the cold upon his back as he was thrown in anger, discarded and slammed into the stone coffin. He struggled, but all his attempts were futile. The bonds were strong, and this rope was not of common origin. Those who now heaved a heavy granite slab atop him saw only the pale corpse-like glow of his changing eyes, peering from the darkness as the sarcophagus was sealed over. A voice spoke, though he could barely make it out.
You wished for immortality, seeking favor with the darkness. Now dwell in it for all eternity, fiend.
Lieutenant Merrin.
Pick them off as they approach!
The bowstrings thrummed, almost in unison. Arrows tore through the air, striking home with deadly effect. The beasts had come first. These skinless horrors, with their canine-like maws gnashing and ripping at the men of Kalundor. Somehow, they scaled the walls of Draedon with ease, and although the shock of it had taken them aback, they had dealt with it. Spears and swords, skewering or hacking at the foul creatures as they came. Merrin had seen nothing like this before. He could never have imagined this scenario, not in his darkest of dreams. Yet here he stood, alongside his men of the North Quarter, fighting for their lives against this dark host. An army, swathed in dark robes, the regalia of the necromantic cult of Nezrakar. By Arnlaw, the practice of necromancy had been forbidden since the days of the Great War, yet now a horde of these dark acolytes sought to bring low Fort Draedon. Yet for what goal he could not say, only that deep down he knew this fight was unwinnable. The bestial creatures and the cultists were easily dealt with. The enemy had brought catapults and some siege weapons, which without their attack would have been laughable at best, but it was not the threat of those weapons that terrified him so. Still waiting to make its entrance was a huge, four-armed demon. Its grey skin rippled with muscle. Hate-filled eyes, visible even at this distance, watched over the siege from within its skull-like features. He had seen groups split off from the gathered army, no doubt raiding parties, looking to scout for the reinforcements or what supplies could be taken and destroyed. Merrin thought of the messengers sent to the surrounding forts and prayed they had gotten word back to Kalundor, for if not, He and the other men were biding their time before joining the others inside this large stone coffin.
Come on! I've seen you fire faster than that during training. It will soon be nightfall. Do you want to face this in the dark?
Lieutenant Merrin, sir.
What is it, Brigand?
Can you not hear the bell, sir?
The bell?
Aye, it's ringing for you. You know what the bell is, sir. It rings for you.
What bell, Brigand?
Yes.
The bell tolls for us all.
The pain hit him first. His arm was broken and he was sure his ribs were cracked. The dull ache in his head felt like he'd spent the entire night drinking, but the taste of blood in his mouth of smashed teeth told him otherwise. He'd been left down there, down in the now empty armory of Fort Drayden. No, not empty. Empty of weapons and armor, but not empty. He was amongst the other men of the fort, those that had battled well to hold off the enemy, fought well, and failed. He lay amongst his fallen comrades. A crowd of mauled and savaged corpses kept him company, and as he stared wide-eyed in disbelief, Lieutenant Merrin tried to focus through the pain, focus just enough to remember what had happened. He recalled the beast, remembered the great roar it gave as it came charging forth, its four limbs pulling apart the walls of the fortress with ease as if it were made from wet sand. He had rallied his men and sought to defend the breach as the vile, skinless creatures poured in like blood from an open wound. Yet they were overwhelmed. All four quarters had fallen within moments of each other as this dark horse swept over Drayden with savage delight. He could do naught as those around him were slaughtered. Slaughtered by demon or by cultist. The bones clinking in their robes as they came forth. Scarred and tattooed faces, pale and withdrawn. Their humanity sucked from them in service to the eternal darkness. They had fallen back and fallen back again, their shield wall growing thinner as the dog-like beasts scurried beneath, tearing into limbs, bellies and groins. The ground was slick with blood, as were their hands and their armour, some his own, much more belonging to his men, and very little from his enemy. A tear trailed his now blood-encrusted face in remembrance. He turned to see Riggan, and another man he could not name defend against a pair of huge armoured warriors. They were overwhelmed in seconds. Riggan's shield shattered as it failed to defend the crushing blow as he was hammered from above by this behemoth's maul. The second man was decapitated in a single swing. An immense blow from a wicked greatsword. These unholy knights tore through the remaining ranks with ease, shrugging off blows that would fell any man as still they came on. Merrin himself had taken the brunt of them all upon his shield. Felt the flat edge dent into his chainmail, the force continuing through his leather inner shirt and shattering both his arm and ribs in the process. He remembered seeing the iron rim of his shield drenched in his blood as he coughed. The pain was excruciating as he spat up a few broken teeth onto the red cobbles of Fort Drayden. The memory faded fast as a noise startled him. His eyes darted, hoping to find the cause of the footsteps, but he could not see their approach. As the voices drew nearer, a sudden wave of nausea washed over him. A feeling of intense repulsion gripped him like a chokehold.
Word will have reached their ears by now, my lord.
I am in no doubt of that, Geralt. What of your men in Arteria? Have they secured the scroll?
Unfortunately, no news to report there, though I have little doubt Eskin is up to the task. His methods are crude, but effective. The villages in northern Arteria, which I personally took care of, should be bearing their fruit now as well. And of course, our reinforcements will be making their way here soon enough. There is the ample supply here as well, I see.
If they do not take the bait, then we will be needing more than this beautiful host can provide.
Surely Valgaridon's beast could sway things in our favor.
Timing is of the essence with that one. And the hound is not long for this world. As the hours diminish, so too does its presence here. Since your agents failed in securing Olaf Druid's offspring, its connection to our world is even weaker.
We did not know he had fled, my lord. The men I sent under
Aeon... Your excuses mean little to me. Had I not invested as much time as I have in you, Geroth, I would have you join my revenants. Do not think this is a pardon. Fail me again.
I will not, my lord.
If Ulrich chooses to lead them, then the demon will be of little use to us regardless. Their grandmaster is powerful. Do not doubt it.
Their icon of war has returned also.
Anvera. So he escaped the Black Fells after all. No matter. I will break him. Where is your boy?
He is up top, my lord. Do you wish me to fetch him?
Until I receive word from Valmaris, keep him within reach at all times.
Even after all he'd seen, Merrin's eyes now widened at the sight of who was now speaking. One man, dressed in dark robes, much like any other amongst the invaders' ranks, except at his chest hung a silver chain talisman, blonde hair pulled tight back over his scalp. Yet it was not this man who caused alarm, but the creature who walked beside him. He first noticed the eyes, a deathly blue glow within its deep sockets. The skin, colour of winter frost, seemed bloodless and inhuman. Yet from below both elbows, from joint to fingertip, a necrotic black rot had taken hold. Horns curved from the back of its skull, finishing before its hideous visage, with blackened gums and teeth barred like a snarling wolf. Its thick, apron-like skirts left behind a trailing smear of blood and what looked like ash.
May I ask a question, my lord?
You may.
Why the scroll? What is its purpose?
The scroll is more than a simple scripture. It is but a piece of what was once a tome of great power. Inked in the days before even the Eridan walked these lands. Written in a language that was spoken before even their gods existed. Venerat scripture will not reveal its secrets to just anyone. If you cannot read what is written, madness will overcome you. But should I look upon it, it will reveal to me the way to Taranul. And once the Duke Astaroth has the lodestone, we can begin this world anew.
Orin. Orin's eyes were fixed upon the night sky. It had been so long since he'd looked upon the stars, he'd almost forgotten their majesty. All his nights previous, he'd either fallen asleep in a drunken stupor, or was well on his way there. Yet now, as he rode, a passenger, alongside the young Ven, Sigmir, he stared up at the heavens, grateful to see them once again.
I tell you what, I've never cared much for gods and goddesses. But if I ever needed proof of the divine, that's it up there. Only a god could make such a thing. No doubt about it.
My people say the stars are a road to the Shadowlands, and that Argvalan's shield shines a light to guide their path.
His shield? Not heard that one before.
Yes, it is renewed in the sky, but each night Yorendweir, the great devourer, takes a bite from it. Agvalan's shield is magic, though, and it will always grow back.
You're talking about the moon, lad.
It is clearly a shield. If you look at it, you can see the battle scars.
Well, back in Arteria, they say the shield is an eye. The goddess Lunarin's eye. And she apparently watches over us all as we sleep. But, if I'm honest, I like your lot's story much better.
Story? You sound like someone I know.
Was he a handsome bastard as well, then?
Sandvik? No, he was an old man. Everyone in the village said he was crazy.
So, we do have something in common, eh?
Oren, look, I was not lying to you. We are not lying to you. It is very real.
Listen, let's not get into that right now, eh? Besides, we'll be in Kalimdor come midday. Then the Order can settle the matter for us.
Oi, you two, keep it down. Do you want to alert every bandit on the road?
Have you seen what she can do, boy? I have. The bandits would be wise to keep well away.
They had been travelling for just short of 3 days when they had been met by a rider sent from the Order. From what little he and Sigmir had overheard, Kreia had been ordered to return to Vengard. As to why or how he knew where to find them, this question still remained unanswered. Though in the end, it mattered little, for as it happened, Kalimdor had been their destination regardless. Orin had tried to strike up a conversation with the man, whose name he discerned to be Balin, but the scout had all but ignored him and Sigmir and spoke only briefly with Kreia. Kreia appeared to be expecting the man, as if she had been waiting for his arrival. If this was due to some precognitive ability she held, she must have had little control over it, for when Sigmir gave her the news of Braedic's decision to head out alone to Fort Drayden, the anger was written as clearly across her face as the tattoos inked into her pale skin. Orin had spent little to no time with the Icon of Magics, mainly his own doing due to his distrust of her. He found her eyes were a constant reminder of the incident back in the mine of Vale of Glass. Yet both Sigmir and Braedic had told him this Beloran woman had been the one who had revived him, snatching him away from the brink of death when they had found him in the Hell Hall beneath Eastwald's graveyard. He'd been arguing with Sigmir when it happened. He tried to explain to the Venishuf that he was leaving camp. He did not wish to be a prisoner, and would rather die than go through the experience again. He would not say it aloud, but the old hunter worried that the hold over his mind was slipping from his grasp. Excessive drinking, savage beatings and near starvation at the hands of those cultists, and now blacking out and memory loss, that, coupled with the fact those around him spoke of some demon within, was all too much for him to handle, and nor would he. He planned to leave. He would find somewhere quiet in the forest and end his life. He covered less than half the distance of the camp before Kreia stepped in front of him, a hand gripping his shoulder, her arm locked in an unmovable restraint.
Let go of me! You've got no right to stop me!
Kreia shook her head at him. Her face was unreadable.
Please. Please, just let me go. I can't do this anymore.
The Icon of Magics then wrapped her other arm around Orin, enveloping him in an embrace. And as she held him there, the old hunter buckled. All his fight, all his gruff and gristle gone in an instant, his emotions overwhelming him as a flood of tears fell between his sobs. Orin cried. Cried so hard and for so long his head had begun to ache. He felt Kree's hands warm upon his face as she levelled her gaze with his. Somehow he knew she was asking for his permission. His consent to explain something to him. And in that moment, in that serene calmness that comes only from pouring out your heart in the form of tears, he agreed. The world flashed by. No longer did he see the Icon of Magics,
no longer the darkening sky or the surrounding woodland. Instead, he saw a girl, a young red-haired youth he felt was vaguely familiar. Laughing as she played, the grey barren soil beneath her doing nothing to dampen her spirits as she span and danced with the other children. In the distance, a dark sea, tumultuous and wrathful, smashed upon mossy rocks. Iron grey clouds threatened to rain, and as a cold wind nipped at their skinny bones, the children played on without a care. A shadow fell upon them. The shadow of a man, tall and broad and thick of beard, his hair the colour of dried blood, with one eye missing and a face like the thunder that now struck the mountainside in the distance. His dark steel armour affixed with a symbol, the crimson bear head, the coat of arms of Olaf Druin. Only then, when his shadow fell upon them, did they stop. Only then did their laughter turn to cries of anguish. The world flashed again, and this time the red-haired girl was much older. She was now nearly recognisable to him as the Lady Kriya. Yet now she stood in a candlelit hall, her bearing statuesque, before the same man who was now greying. His armour had been replaced by fine garb, trimmed in expensive furs, yet still the red bear mask remained upon his chest. He was not alone, for beside him sat a woman, blonde of hair and hard-faced, and she leaned intently upon the feasting table, a table she shared with Olaf Druin and one other. This was a young man. His features were serpent-like, made even more so by his pale green eyes. Green eyes which seemed to be weighing up the young Kriya. A dismissive wave came from the woman, with an equal gesture from the man, as the pair turned their heads to await Olaf Druin's decision. A slow nod and smirk gave the order, and the crack of a whip followed. Orin felt the sting as it tore open the flesh of the young icon of magic. Then he felt relief as a chest of silver and gold was presented before the triumvirate, the payment for her. She would be free. Free to join them. Free from this enslavement. Then terror again, as the image of a glowing blade disappearing into Kriya's screaming mouth filled his thoughts. Thick leather restraints around her arms and torso, as well as a hook, kept her jaw from moving. Her tongue ripped out and removed as a gurgling cry of agony filled the room. Cruel laughter amongst her cries of pain filled his mind. And as the image faded from Orin's vision, he is left only with the words lingering in his thoughts.
They may have bought you, but our secrets belong to us.
From that moment on, Orin knew he had found a kindred spirit in Kriya. Who but someone who had endured such punishment, such violence, such hate could understand? Kriya had survived it as he had, and she had saved his life once again.
Have you been to Kalendor before, Orin?
I've worked here before. Bears mainly. They get big up here. Not as big as Alantia. Those fuckers are as big as a house. Need lots of dogs to bring them down. No, never been to the capital. They don't take kindly to outside faiths, I hear. So advise you keep tight-lipped about your moon shield. It's bad enough. You look exactly what you are, lad.
And what is that?
Well, beside the expensive pelts, Tarvin Fox, if I'm not wrong, you look just like a Ven.
And you look like a dirt farmer. Those trues wouldn't even fit me, ha!
Aye, but a dirt farmer could worship Galador. Whereas a barbarian like yourself, well, you've got more gods than I've had hot meals.
Barbarian? Outlander insults, they are just terrible.
It wasn't that bad. You knew it was an insult after all.
You are a funny man, Orin. I like you very much.
You're all right as well, lad.
As the dawn came, sunlight pierced the ever-fading veil of night. Solarin, as he knew it, or Yindos, as Sigmir would call it. Regardless of the name, it was the sun that steadily rose upon the horizon, and with it, a warming glow birthed the day anew. The tall towers and high walls of Kalimdor bathed in the glimmer, stout and proud, rising from the mound it sat upon. Orin smiled as he heard Sigmir gasp.
By all the gods!
Kreia looked back at the young Ven and nodded at Orin with a similar smile, the two sharing a moment of joy at Sigmir's surprise.
Just remember, there's only one here.
And Galador is his name. Praise him!
Don't speak to anyone in robes, Sigmir. Best keep your eyes down and your mouth shut as well. Remember, outsiders aren't welcome unless you're trading. As a rule, no talk about your gods. They might forgive you for being a savage, but I don't want to debate my lack of faith with anyone inside these walls.
Surely it cannot be that bad.
I've heard stories. Anyway, best not to find out.
Rowan. Looking into the crystalline wall in front of him, Rowan saw the swirls and fractal patterns held within the Aramar's stone. As his mind began to wander, he tried to imagine the ancient sage of the Order. What had he looked like? How had he figured all of this out, imbuing this stone with the properties suited for the duty it had performed? Such matters were beyond his understanding, and as his thoughts drifted, he did his best to recollect the last conversation he'd had with his brother Alduin. Yet, all trains of thought ended in deep sadness. They had ever been close as children, but when Rowan had left to do service to his nation, fighting against the Beloran raiders that frequently encroached upon northern Arteria, from then on, things had changed between them. He remembered seeing his elder brother and how withdrawn and dishevelled he'd become. It had only been a matter of months, yet it seemed to him that Alduin had aged many years. A realization dawned upon him. Was it his abilities that had kept the darkness at bay? His very presence which had stopped whatever power sought to control his sibling from taking hold? Before he could consider the matter further, Rowan clutched his head in both hands as a wave of nausea came over him. It ended in a feeling that he was now sinking into the very stone he sat upon. It wasn't until he put his hands out in order to steady himself that he noticed there was nothing below him. Startled, he looked down to see the crown of his head, his dark cropped hair and shoulders draped in the Order's uniform attire. It had already begun. A deafening rush of wind, ending in a sudden crack which echoed all around him, accompanied the shift in his surroundings. Where once had been the purple-hued crystal of the Stone of Arimar, now was a darkened sky, green and dark blue blending into a cloud-filled eternity. This was like no place he'd been before. A singular red light pierced the dense cloud, bathing the world in its insidious glow. He span around, looking for something familiar, but the rise and fall of jagged peaks, even the very ground beneath him, stretched on a vast waste of rust-coloured soil. Wherever he was, the sense of danger and dread was palpable. His eyes were suddenly drawn to the mountainside, one of the many around him, yet this one served as the foundations of a towering fortress. Its black walls appeared shadow-like and imposing, even in such ominous surroundings. It dominated the twisting landscape, demanding his attention with a strange pull, a deep calling, urging him towards it. As he did so, the world around him fell away, the sky melting into the ground, which in turn poured like grains of sand into an unfathomable void below. Darkness now enveloped him as he found himself alone in the blackness. It was the silence he noticed first, an overwhelming feeling of being alone, lost and in the grip of despair, as if all life in the universe had been snuffed out of existence. Rowan was puzzled. He had been warned time and time again that although every vigil was different, The one thing that was constant was the conflict with demonic entities that vied for your body. It was then he realized he could no longer see his body. And if this ethereal form he had taken held a stomach, it now sank deep with terror.
Welcome, Rowan. This has taken longer than I wished.
The darkness began to fade, though the very walls of his surroundings seemed almost as black as the void. Below, a slow rolling fog carpeted the ground. Ahead of him, wide room-length steps rose up well beyond his height like some ebon mountain contained within the room's restraints. At the pinnacle sat a throne, its details lost on him from its distance, but it was still large, and appeared larger still than the monstrous being that was sat atop it.
Face me, demon! I am not afraid of you!
The tremble in your voice tells me otherwise, and you wish to dispense with the introductions. I would have thought you would at least like to know your foe.
You already seem to know who I am.
Indeed I do. In fact, I know some of your family quite well, Rowan Aslather.
Who are you then?
I am the Lord Valmaris, serving Duke of the Bloodlands. And you are my most honored guest.
Rising up from its seating, the creature began to descend the steps. The height was much larger than it had first appeared to Rowan, standing taller than two men. The strange being seemed to dominate its surroundings. Its trappings glinted with spikes, a weird armor that encompassed the fiend's upper body entirely. Its pale-skinned face bore exaggerated features, as well as a wide maw filled with jagged teeth akin to that of the sharks that swam beneath the Shattered Mouth Sea. It smiled at him upon approach, the very act stirring up a deep-rooted fear within Rowan.
This is a
real... Oh, it is very real, Rowan. Though you have no reason to fear me, I only wish for you to listen. Listen to an offer I have for you. It is the very reason you are here before me. The very reason I keep the beasts at bay, stopping these demons from devouring your soul.
Go ahead. I will listen.
Rowan did not want to bargain, but he did not want to appear weak either. Whatever this creature was, he felt almost crippled by its presence alone.
God, firstly, let me explain something to you. I know of your brother, Aldwin. I too know the demon who used his body. He is an underling of mine, a rash monster who wishes for nothing but carnage. In fact, it is his very nature to destroy without reason. He has served his purpose in the past, a rabid dog fit to kill without question. But now, he has gone against my strict command and entered your world without permission. I cannot allow this to go unpunished.
He will be punished. The Order will lay him low, and I have sworn an oath to see it done.
Oh, and I'm sure your Order will try. I know of it. And I also know that they cannot defeat Astaroth. Listen. Did they not foresee your coming here? Or if they did, why would they allow it? The truth is, Rowan, they are not as powerful as they would have you believe. I, on the other hand, can bring this dog to heel. I alone have the strength to drag him back here and deal out the punishment you wish to exert. Or if you truly wish to deal that killing blow, there is another way.
The Order would never allow you to step one foot into our world.
You're right. They would never allow me. But you, Rowan, there is a way for the pair of us to unite, so to speak. I will gift you my strength, and you will give me the body to do it.
Never!
What a surprise! You would not agree to let a demon into your body. What if I told you that I am not a demon? What if I told you I was once mortal like you? I made the same mistake your brother did, Rowan. I allowed myself to be swayed, gave in to the dark powers that reside here in Belgoroth, as did Anirion.
I am not my ancestor, nor am I my brother. I will not be swayed.
Only I can defeat Astaroth, and I alone can free your brother's soul, so it may find its way to whatever afterlife it pleads for. Or if not, eternity of suffering within the stone prisons your order uses is all that awaits Alduin. He suffers even now, Alduin.
No! No! I will not believe it!
Very well. Let me show you what will come to pass. Call out to me, should you wish to change your mind. But remember, time is not on your side.
Before he could react, Rowan was flashed back into the darkness he'd been in previously. Only now, ahead of him, he could see Kalendor. He could see riders approaching its gates. He saw a woman. A woman with red hair and fearsome eyes. Anvidar. As he lifted the quill from the small square of parchment, Anvidar sighed. When had his handwriting become so sloppy, he mused. He was clearly out of practice. Staring at it for a moment longer before deciding, it was legible enough. The message to Rowan was short, but the meaning behind it was clear enough. As he folded the letter within the cloak, he placed it into the bag, remembering with little fondness his own ordeal when he, like Rowan, had endured the vigil. It had seemed like a lifetime ago, his acceptance into the Order, his appointment to Knight Gasherick Moncherin, and then to Knight Osric Vance, before finally achieving his own knighthood. He felt a small pang of guilt, which grew the more he fought on it. Had he now doomed Rowan to a life like his own? Could Rowan even survive the vigil? Anvidar was confident in the Man of Gilglas. His psychic abilities alone would see him through the worst of it. At least, that was what the Grand Master and Sigulf had told him. Anvidar now awaited the return of Ulrich, who had been summoned to the King's Palace earlier that day. The Grand Master had wished to make plans for dealing with this archdemon Astaroth, and in so doing, they would put an end to Kazalan's efforts in spreading his influence. As he carried the bag with him, he made his way past the training halls and small alcove temples, which seemed not to be in use. Nodding to initiates and training masters alike, and watching with amusement at the scribes which milled about the library's vault, he had come to find Sigulf here, and he found him straight away. The Icon of Knowledge did not look pleased to see him, though, not that he ever had.
You have business here, Icon of War.
Good morrow to you as well, Sigulf. I have business here, and it is information I seek.
Then you have come to the right place. Ask what you will, Anvidar, but make it brief. I have your new friend's vigil to watch over.
Very well. The Grand Master made mention you have some knowledge on the archdemon I encountered.
Yes, I remember the accounts pertaining to Astaroth. Was there anything specific?
As well you know, I must undergo the ritual of joining.
Anvidar could not help but see the slight twitch of Sigil's lips at the mention of the ritual. A momentary smirk, gone as fast as it came, yet Anvidar noted it nonetheless.
I am to be the one who will face him in battle. Knowledge is power.
The accounts are old, written close to a millennia past. They speak of a young man, Argilus, whom had been seduced by the demon of which we speak, murdering his family and mindlessly attacking others in the town before eventually being subdued by the hands of his own brother. A knight of the Order named Bowen Caladan with the help of the current serving Grand Master, a one Danan Osgoodson. A binding sigil of great power was enacted within these very halls. He was bound in a most potent form of Varlak, as well as Edigern's chain, I believe. Once he had been contained, those that took him to the prison tomb beneath the Blackfells all fell prey to madness, and some of them slew themselves. It was a terrible business.
You knew all of this before I was sent to Attilion's watch?
I am ashamed to admit I did not. Looking over my own records, Anvadar, I have found them altered by someone. Someone who knew my writing well enough to mimic it. And in that, it could have been one of many scribes here. Gellin, Audric, Yeomar, Melanus. The list continues.
Anvadar stared at the icon of knowledge. He knew well enough Sigulf would not admit to a mistake if it were not true. And that worried him all the more.
Whomever it was has taken the account from the library also. I cannot say who, but I have my suspicions.
Anvadar noted Sigulf staring off in the direction of a young man he did not recognize. He was dark of hair and with an olive complexion. He was unaware of their staring as he wrote, quill in hand, copying an old crumbling scroll.
Yeomar. He is overly keen and has a strange nature about him. I've seen him eyeing up my vault key. It will not leave my belt, by Galador, I swear it.
He looks Sondaran. Your prejudices blind you, Sigulf, and you should know better, being a learned man.
Yes, well, I must take my leave. But be wary what you say around him all the same.
Before you go, I wish you to give this to Rowan.
A bag?
See that he gets it. It is merely a cloak. I wish it returned to him.
I see. Fair enough.
After taking his leave, the Icon of War made his way to leave Vengard, hoping to spend some time in the city above. Perhaps old Jennifer, the merchant he used to purchase his blessed salt from, was back in the city. His supply was dwindling, and he would no doubt find use for it in the coming days. Passing through the guarded gates, Anvadar was stopped in his tracks, for crossing the bridge ahead of him, he spotted a familiar sight. The Icon of Magics had returned to Vengard, and she, like him, came without her squire. A boy, who looked to be Venish, as well as a brown-haired man of middling age walked beside Kria, but Braedic was nowhere in sight. As she approached, Anvadar saluted her with the customary free chest strikes and a bow as he always did, especially for her.
We meet again, lady. It has been far too long. It is good to look upon you once more.
Kria's smile was as wide as Anvadar's shoulders. The Icon of Magics mimicked his salute and then the bow, and without a pause, embraced him as a dear friend.
You have brought friends with you, I see. And Braedic?
Kria's face turned to a puzzled look, as she turned to look back at her companions. Anvadar winced, remembering just how he had felt when Melanus had asked the same question of him concerning Elias upon his return to Vengard.
Braedic, he left us a good time ago. He should have returned by now.
He has not returned, I'm afraid. He will be on his way, I am sure of it.
Amor in Bremoth. This is Sigmir. He's a daft lad, but the likable sort, you know.
I am Anvadar.
Hail and well met to you, Anvadar.
I was hoping to speak to Braedic. I owe him an apology.
That makes two of us. Come, we have food and drink. You especially look like you could use a meal. And perhaps some healing.
Maybe some healing, but I don't suppose you've got any arteria red. I am in dire need of it.
I'm sure we do.
As they began to walk away, Anvadar noted the concern on Kria's face and placed one of his large hands upon her shoulder.
You have reason to worry, Kria.
She nodded her reply.
Come then. The Grand Master will be returning soon.
That was Chapter 1, Part 14A of Aetherin Dark Saga. The next episode will be the final one in this chapter. The podcast now has its very own subreddit, which is r/Aetherin. A good place to get in touch if you don't use Twitter whilst I get the website started. I also have a Patreon, where you can speak to me and eventually you will be able to gain access to the Tales from the Scrolls Patreon exclusive episodes. If you just want to help fund the podcast, that's also greatly appreciated. Please find the link for both the Patreon and the subreddit in the show notes. With that said, while you wait for the finale episode, I'd like for you to please listen to the following messages from friends of this podcast.
Hi everyone, I'm Randy Greer. You've been enjoying the very awesome Aetherin Dark Saga. Here's a short sample of my science fiction adventure, Black Star.
Are you seeing this?
Yes. The human corpse appears to have been mauled. Keep your visor still so I can scan. I need to analyze the scan. Do not touch anything with a bio reading until we can confirm the cause of death.
Understood.
Let's head to navigations. Something tells me the sooner we're out of here, the better.
Was it the dead body?
A dead body cannot speak, Sebastian.
Thank you, Fantessa.
This is not so bad, Sebastian. Being here actually reminds me of training the Huntresses of the Mulwari.
Really? How's that?
We would bring the new Huntresses to capture their first Gwarmok. In the dark of the night, the Gwarmok can see light from great distances. So we had no torches. Only the incredible night vision of the Mulwari. Our blades, and each other.
Oh, okay. And then what?
We closed in on our prize together, like we are now. We knew we were close when we found a fresh kill at the riverbed. The blood from upstream led the way to the den of the great beast. But just when we felt we were the Huntress, we realized the fresh kill was a trap set by the cunning Gwarmok, who had now become the hunter. Just then, the Gwarmok screamed and snatched two of our youngest, dragging them into the dark of the forest. Though we killed the beast, they were never seen again.
Was that supposed to make me feel better? About finding that dead body?
No, what?
We should talk about something else.
Yes, please. Like how we're going across this clearing.
Black Star is now available on Amazon Audible and the iTunes Store. Thanks for listening and keep enjoying Aetherin Dark Saga.
It is written, the meek shall inherit the earth, but not on my watch. I am King Asylus. I wasn't born to be a king, but America needed something democracy could no longer give her. And so, like a chess master, I made my moves with anticipation and bravado. This is not just my story, nor simply about my rise to power. This is a story about our world and the monsters that control governments. What happens when the monsters cannot control me? The Rise of King Asylus. Listen on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher. Visit theriseofkingasylus.com.